Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio, and this is going to be a good one. We have a return guest with us, Stone.
Hey, this is going to be a lot of fun. You know, we had Bill Hassig with Top Right, and we enjoyed it so much, we asked him to come back with a client so we could dive into more of his work. I've been looking forward to this for weeks, man.
I know. It's going to be good. So, Bill, why don't we start with you and recap a little bit about what Top Right's up to, maybe your mission and purpose, and explain who you got with us today.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys, for having me back. So Top Right, just to do the quick summary for those that might not have heard the last program, Top Right's a strategic boutique marketing firm, a combination really consulting firm and agency that has a variety of clients. And what we do for those clients is really focus on their story and how we bring that story to the market.
Right.
How we help them define not just what they do, but why they do it, what that purpose is, create a brand architecture, a positioning architecture, and a strategy to deliver that in a way that is both compelling and evocative, obviously, because that's what we want to do for them. But it really creates the legs for their message and the legs for their business development and sales activities and enablement. And the typical client for us, which we talked a little bit about last time, as you might guess, is going to be a corporate entity that's a larger or medium-sized corporate
right.
entity, some smaller companies, and some very large companies, including locally based companies like Chick-fil-A and Delta. What I thought would be interesting based on our last conversation is to give you a little bit of a different flavor of a client that we have that's locally based. And occasionally, because we are a boutique firm and don't have the massive overheads of large agencies or large consulting firms, we can customize engagements. And we can customize engagements for clients that we really genuinely believe in. We just love what they do because
right.
they're creating a new way of operating within a particular industry. And then our role is to help be an enabler for them to tell that story, craft that story, tell that story. So I thought it would be a very interesting to bring one of our new clients, Loud Fund, which is an Atlanta-based emerging startup redefining how the music industry operates, and some of the Loud Fund artists into the studio, because my guess is that's going to be a little different than your typical business guest that wears a suit like I'm wearing and might actually provide a different flavor of the business. But it speaks to what we do, which is help clients from whether it's the ground floor in literally defining their story and mm-hmm. launching, or larger clients where they have a marketing campaign or story and we go in and help them refine it. In this case, we're working with the team to really build out what they do and how they do it and then take that into the market in different ways. And so I've invited a few folks here. Sam Tesh, sitting across from me here, is the CEO and founder of Loud Fund.
Welcome, Sam.
Hey, thank you. Thanks for having me.
And it could be great to have Sam kind of tell the
sure.
story.
All right, Sam, we'll get to you. Talk about Loud Fund. What are you guys up to?
Great. I love talking about Loud Fund.
All right.
Actually, on the end of each email signature, it says it's time to get loud. So, and the nickname for me in the office is the Mouth of the South. So, so I love talking about this, and thank you for the opportunity. And I want to just couch this first by saying how grateful we are to be partnered with Top Right and Bill and his team. They have been great so far. And I tell you, I'll give some background on our funding levels and things like that.
Well,
but
first, I want to get back even earlier than that.
Yeah, okay.
So talk about how the idea came about and
oh, great.
The early, early days.
Early, early days is I was a full-time musician, and I learned the economics of the music business the hard way.
And then share a little bit about the economics, because
yeah.
some people in their head think, oh, musicians are just getting paid to have a good time and making money. And
man, I wish that were true.
That's not accurate?
No, it's not accurate. Mm-hmm. I love the visions of sugar plums and hey, we're all just making platinum records and hanging them on walls. And the truth is that it's not like that at all. It wasn't like that in 2002 and 2003 when I was in it and had the record deals and learning the economics of that. And so I took that and I realized this is going to be a difficult model to sustain. And I realized
as a musician,
as
you
a musician,
that.
Yeah, as a musician, how a deal works is how you might see on something like American Greed. Frankly, it's like something that you would do if you went to a title pawn shop or if you went and dealt with a loan shark. And that model gets rinsed and repeated time and time again. And so this is how it works with a record company is, and I'm speaking stereotypically here, but this happens a lot.
Now a record company and a label, that's the same thing?
Or they are synonyms? The same thing. Yeah. I guess we should clear up some of those definitions. They are synonyms. Mm-hmm. The record company or a record deal. Mm-hmm. That's what we'll talk about right now is a record label deal is, typically how it works is an artist works very hard, hones their craft, builds a fan base.
And that artist is typically independent. They're out there. They're battling. They're going to bars. They're playing wherever anybody will have them. And then, so like if a band goes to a bar here locally, how much is – what's the economics of that? Is that $1,000? Is that $100? Is that –
it depends. It depends.
So it's whatever you can get.
It's how many people you can bring through the door.
So it's you get a piece of the action of whoever attends, typically, is how a band is compensated?
Yep.
That's exactly right. The bar will either do a split or you get a portion of the door fees. But that, you know, live show economics are a little bit different than recorded music economics.
Okay.
But
you need the following before you can do the recorded, right? So it's like a chicken and egg thing.
Exactly, exactly. And so what happens with a typical record deal is an artist, if they're fortunate enough, get floated a loan.
It's an advance. Right?
That's actually exactly what it's called is a record advance. And then the artist, in best case scenario, is left with about 15% of that revenue. 15%.
Like a revenue of a single being sold?
Yes, on iTunes. Oh, it could be
so out of the dollar, they get 15 cents.
15 cents if they're lucky.
That's a good deal.
85%, so 85 cents of every dollar, goes to the record company.
Well, it goes to iTunes, probably gets...
iTunes gets their cut.
50 or 60% of the dollar?
iTunes gets 30.
30?
30, okay. Yeah.
So there's 55 cents for the label.
Yep. See, now you're understanding.
I don't know how it works.
No,
I'm
that's good. So basically, out of that loan, the artist has to repay that full loan, everything from hotel rooms for the record executives to water in the studio, you name it. Everything gets billed to that loan, to that advance. Out of that 15%, the artist has to pay that whole thing back. And they don't see $1 on any recorded music until they're lucky enough to get 15 cents of each dollar.
And they have to continue to pay for the overhead of whatever it is that they're doing in their tour, or how they're promoting the album, and all that stuff.
Exactly, and that's in perpetuity. So the record company now owns the rights to the art, to the music,
right?
To all of the master recordings in perpetuity, and that's frankly what the business model.
But is that the current business model, or that was the back in the day business model?
Both.
Currently now.
Currently, it's actually worse because in the example that I just gave, that is with recorded music.
Right
now, record companies, because you know everyone understands that the music business has taken a hit because of. Starting with Napster and then iTunes, you know, there's been a lot of disruptive players in the technology side of music, and the music business hasn't been able to necessarily keep up. So, where do they squeeze? They squeeze the artist. Excuse me. So now they do these great things called 360 deals, where the same percentage that we just talked about with recorded music applies. Now the record company also says, "Well, we are going to also take a portion of your live show." Business and your merchandise business and keep going.
Right.
And so it's called a 360 deal. So they put a hula hoop around each artist and grab a portion of all of that because there hasn't been an economic model that helps the record company stay in business otherwise.
So now, if you go back in time, there was the musician had to be found by a label. Right. So they're out there and the label chose a handful of people And those handful of people were promoted by the label and got on TV. And at the time, there were only a handful of places where they could even appear, right?
Right.
So they were the gatekeeper between the artist and the audience.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So nowadays, it seems to me that there, you really don't need a gatekeeper anymore as much because you can go directly to the audience. Like you can go to YouTube, you can film yourself and put it on YouTube and build a following virtually. Is that?
Yes, I'm hearing Pac-Man bells ring in my head because you're nailing what it's all about.
But the challenge then, though, is that since there's no gatekeeper, there's a lot of noise. There's a million bands out there battling and trying to get the attention of a more and more fragmented audience.
Yes. And so...
So now the label still has power in that they can say, well, I'll get you on Jimmy Fallon show and I'm going to get you on these things. They're still being a gatekeeper. Right, it's harder to get an independent guy or band to cut the line and get on one of these late night shows or get kind of exposure in a mass way.
Well, that's really not true as much. That is the perception. Where major labels have the most horsepower is in terrestrial FM radio.
Okay, so they can go to because there's only it's a conglomerate, right?
Right.
There's only a handful of players in terrestrial radio. They're going to get my guy's band on or my lady's band on,
right?
And then they can kind of force feed that content to the audience.
Yeah, and so, but with that, you know, you're talking about the same 20 songs,
right?
Played over and over and over,
and that's why people are listening less and less to.
Terrestrial
radio.
Right. And things like Sirius XM are growing and so on. And so that's exactly right. But in terms of the late night shows and the press, that comes down to building relationships with people that you can hire.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll get into how Loud Fund works, but I can just start by telling you this. Our fundamental belief is that artists and bands are businesses. And so you treat it like a business. For example, one of the artists that we are bringing in today is a group called Von Gray, four sisters in the Atlanta area that are just killing it. But they've been on Letterman, Conan, big time morning shows,
right?
And they haven't had to have a major label deal.
Did that translate to a larger audience and more sales and more money?
Sure.
So there is a correlation by that kind of exposure. Impacting the bottom line of the artist,
sure. But I equate that similar to any business. Loud Fund's going to make have a bigger sphere of influence the more people know about us,
right?
And that applies, you know, that applies.
So the disruption that you're bringing to the table is you're getting rid of the label is what should be afraid of you. That's who you're disrupting? Is that accurate?
Like that's a great question.
Is that the press release caption?
Yeah. Labels, be afraid. Coming this Halloween.
Well, because whoever has in control of the status quo doesn't want to give that up.
True. But, you know, we have friends. We have friends that are our record label executives. There's been, by and large, a lot of support of this because they realize that it's dying. I mean,
It just has to change. I mean, everything is changing. I mean, there was a time where that you would go to the movies, and then there was a time where you would buy a VHS tape of the movie, and then there was a time where there was a DVD, and there was a time where they got rid of the DVDs, and then now you're buying it on Netflix. I mean, things change. Technology has impacted lots of industries.
Right. Remember Blockbuster?
Right. Yeah. Talk to them. Do you think that they like Netflix? And remember, Netflix used to mail you DVDs. And they had to change, too.
Yeah, that's true. What this does, I mean, to answer your question, not all labels are bad. I would say the ones that are taking the model that we described, which is the majority, they should be afraid. It's unnecessarily harsh on the artists. So Loud Funds, we're advocates for the artists. We've switched the power to the artist.
Right.
Yeah, which may segue. You lead the way, but you know, I'd love to describe.
Okay,
what we
so
do,
now, yeah, let's you know, get into exactly what you guys are bringing to the table.
Sure.
So you felt this pain. You saw that the artists were getting, I don't want to say mistreated, because no one's forcing them to sign these deals.
Right.
So they're choosing this, but it becomes inequitable at a certain point in time, especially the more successful they get. Because I'm sure labels invest a lot of money in a lot of bands that they explode, and then they lost all the money too. So it isn't that these guys are these evil people.
Exactly.
But, you know, they took risks on some people that didn't pan out. And some artists that became successful, they got kind of the raw end of the deal.
Right, and we're not an enemy to the label.
Right, I don't want to. I don't want to make that point, because I think that the label served a function at a period of time,
sure.
And then the technology, I think, is moving faster than they can adapt.
Exactly.
And then I think that gives an opening to people like you, right?
Exactly.
So now let's share what you guys are up to.
One way to think about this is, we've gone through this story with we know with Sam and his team is. You've got a fundamentally broken business model in the music industry. I mean, it's being forced to change. It's being forced to change in ways that are disruptive. So the question is, what then is the new model?
Right.
What is it that brings? Because something will occur.
Right.
Whether it's created
it's
by
gonna
the,
fill the void.
It's going to fill the void.
Right.
So is there an opportunity to connect artists and fans and create what that new story becomes?
Right. And remove the friction.
Precisely. Right. And that is exactly what Sam and his team are doing.
All right, so let's go.
Yeah, that's great. So this is what we recognize after feeling the pain of that and the backstory of that. I started connecting with people that I had great respect with or respect for, and a few of them were in the Silicon Valley in the technical world with musical backgrounds. A few of them were people that I just really respected their creative thinking. Anyway, we started connecting over Google Hangouts and
technology.
Exactly. Oh, in different parts of the country. And we just started off, frankly, by just complaining. And then we got tired of that. And we said, listen, let's stop complaining. Let's come up with some solutions here. Let's not be the people that are, that aren't acting. And so, with that, Loudfund was born. We figured out that we can connect, that what's happened is that not only has the music industry been slow to adapt in the technological side, but along the way, they've ignored the fans. And I say that because...
Maybe they didn't ignore them. They just take them for granted.
Oh, good. Fair enough. Fair enough. I'll take that. And so what we wanted to do is just say, listen, what has it been about from day one? All of the revenue from day one of the music industry has come from the fans. We can get tied up in details of copyrights and licensing and all these kinds of things. It doesn't matter. It's about the fans. All of the revenues come from that. What happens that defines a culture and DNA? Well, the DNA of any band that we all know and love comes from the relationship between the artist and their fans.
Right.
I mean, even to what fashion trends and things like that.
Absolutely.
You're identifying with the community. And so we said, wait a minute. Okay. So we're seeing a model suffer, something that we love, music and the music industry, suffer because it's so weighted on commodity, squeezing. And so what we do in Loudfund is we make it more about community. And then the money works. And so this is how it works. Is for the first time in history, artists can do real record deals with their fans. One of the primary reasons why we're launching from Atlanta is because legislation and the regulatory environment here is the most progressive in the country.
Right.
And so there's something called the Invest Georgia exemption that brought our team from California, from Indiana, from different parts of the country, and has ignited people that have been fighting the cause for years, such as the Georgia Music Partners and the Atlanta chapter of the Grammys. They've all rallied around us as a company and leaned into waving the flag of Georgia. Like, hey, Georgia, the rest of the country, take note.
Right.
Because a disruptive platform, a music scene like you haven't seen in years, is being birthed from here. And so what it does is to get into a little bit of the model is artists go to their fan base and they raise money from the fans to do a project, to promote a project, whatever it is that makes sense. But a business model is provided to the fans and they say, instead of, hey, donate to me, like other crowdfunding things. Hey, donate, help me. I'm a charity. No, they're a business. And so taking that philosophy of artists aren't charities, they're businesses. They accept investment from their fans. And then...
So what is the fan getting?
The fan gets a percentage of that particular project for 1 year after release based on the percentage that the artist set. We don't set it. So an artist can do an 80-20 deal with the fans. They can do a 50-50 deal. Everyone in this room is doing a 50-50 deal with their fans. So 50% of the earnings of the project...
But is the earnings the 15 cents on the dollar earnings, or is this this is outside of the label? This is their own kind of internal project.
Exactly. So they're
so
they're,
then they can set the terms and they can
exactly.
Right. And then 50-50, is that the gross net? Like, how is that determined?
It's net. iTunes gets what iTunes gets. Right. You know, so these other outlets. Yeah, and so Loudfund distributes to over 300 outlets globally. We have direct deals with, you know, everything from iTunes to Spotify to Pandora. We have a direct deal with SiriusXM. We track that, do all of the accounting, all of the tax filings.
So you built that technological platform
that
enables the artists to kind of plug into and then get their content out there, because that's important, right? And then it gives a way to keep track of things, because for the investor, that's important.
Right. And the software also facilitates a fan or investor dashboard. So... all along the way, if you invest in, for example, Rubens Bell, that are sitting across from us right now, that if you invest in them, you'll be able to track how well that project's doing. In essence, the fan becomes the record company. And we really lean into that language. Not only is there upside for the fans financially, but they get to do what any record company does that's worth their salt, which is promote a project. And so... We think that fundamentally changes the way people value music. I mean, what we know is that people are listening to music now more than they ever have in history, by far. It's not even close.
Right. There's a lot more choices now
than
any time in history, right?
Well, sure. And it's on your phone, and it's on all these things. You can get it so easily because of technological advances. And so, but we're also seeing that people are paying for music less.
Right.
But now, how does that change if you know that you can support your favorite artist, they're being super cool by sharing with you,
right?
You have a chance to make money. Well, now you're going to go to your sphere of influence, and you're going to tweet it. You're going to post it on Facebook, and you're going to tell all your bros, hey, man, buy this record. It's really good. Check out this record.
Right.
That is the community core that promotes sustainability.
Okay,
and that's what we're about.
So now that was, at one point, that was in your head as a good idea, right?
Yeah, right, right.
So how'd you move it from your head to get a band to try that?
Oh, that was tricky. That was tricky because, and I'm gonna pass the ball here in a second, but I'll just tell you where we were coming from is that we have a process, and some of it's driven by software. But at the end of the day, the software facilitates what ends up being a human touch. We're people. You know, you referenced earlier about how it used to be A&R guys or the record label will go discover talent. And we really take that model. I mean, we're not about robots. We have software doing it, but we're about human beings. And so we meet with all of the artists at this level, at this stage of the company. We meet with all of the artists. We vet them.
So who was the first one who...
The very first artist to sign was an artist named Rudy Vaughn. He, local Atlanta artist, just doing great, played on international stages, and plays all parts of the country. And I went to him. I've had a relationship with him
for
a long time.
So you knew him personally?
Knew him personally. Right. And went and just said, man, what do you think? And it was me and some of the other co-founders and a whiteboard. And basically I looked at him and just...
Say, what would work for you?
What would work for you? And trust me.
Right.
This is what we're going to do. Trust me. And he did it. And now we're sitting here with some other just...
So how many artists you have now?
Right now we have 10. We have.
So we're still at the early stages.
Early stages.
So these guys are early adopters.
They are, and they adopted this before we had any software to show them. I mean, before there was a loudfund.com.
Because they're that hungry for a better solution.
Yeah, and you know, I want to believe that they saw that we were being genuine and passionate. And
all right, let's get them in and get their take on things. All right, who do you got?
This is Matt and Trey from Rubens Bell.
All right.
Hello. What's going on?
Okay, which one of you signed off on this first? Which one of you came kicking and screaming?
I knew Sam from back in the day. We played in a corporate group called A-Town A-List with actually Rudy. And this, I don't even know how many years ago now, 3-4 years ago.
Sure.
And he contacted me, he somehow networked through me and then realized I was playing on this band, Rubens Bell. And he was like, I got this thing, Loudfund, I'm trying out. Want to come check out one of your shows? We played at Unplugged at the Park. Headlined that at Park Tavern, and he brought the crew out, and that was the first time we like really got introduced to what was going on, and then we had a meeting at their office a couple weeks later, and we were sold from that moment on.
So that was an easy decision for you guys?
Emotionally, yes.
We've only been a band since the beginning of this year. We started in January.
And bands are kind of transitive, right? You have a lot of moving parts, people coming and going.
Yeah. My brother and I were a part of a group, and the drummer and Trey.
It's always the drummer, right? They're the problem child.
Actually, yeah. Maybe. Maybe Trey is. maybe I am.
It's a different show.
and we decided that the movement of the four of us needed to move to a new company, a new band.
Okay.
And I think the reason why I stress that is I don't think a lot of bands come up understanding that it's not just about showing up to a gig and having fun, which, I mean, it is about that, but there is a lot more involved in order to sustain what you're actually trying to do, which is a livelihood.
And it's probably difficult to get the band members to all buy in on the same vision, right? That we're a business, that this is a part of this is a business, part of this is a show, right?
So it's definitely a trickle effect. It's definitely like someone has to stand for it and then convince the next guy, and the next guy convinces the, you know,
right.
That's kind of how it always is, especially when you get 4 or 5 heads that all have different opinions.
And different levels of scar tissue from your past, right?
Yeah, I mean, we've all been in the different ends of the industry, for sure. So I think Trey knew Sam, and then
so you didn't know Sam.
I had never met him before.
Okay, so you had a leap of faith here.
A little bit. I took Trey's word.
So how did it sound to you as someone who you didn't have any history with?
It
sounded too good to be true. It sounded like this is.
Last year, a good friend of mine, I told him that I was wanting a record deal, that I would not sign a record deal with anybody unless it was something that I could control. And before I know it, Trey's approaching me with a guy named Sam who has
and
a
so
company.
Control was a big issue, and this gives you ultimate control,
yeah,
right?
Like, yeah, I have creative rights.
Right?
I
get That's important?
Yeah, it's extremely important. You know, we're a product, you know, and then they have a product, and that's how businesses work, you know?
Right.
Like, we're teaming up together, you know?
Now, have you done something? Has something gone out through their system, or we're not at that stage yet?
Yeah, we are signed. And
yeah, tell them about your campaign.
Okay, so you did
a segue.
Go ahead, man.
So you have a campaign.
Yes,
for you have a project out on Loudfund.
Yes, we have a campaign out.
What's the campaign? What are you guys doing?
We're funding for a record, some merchandise, and a vehicle.
A car.
Yeah.
A bus.
A van.
A van to take you around.
Yeah.
So and what is the value of this? Or is that important? Is that part of the process?
I mean, 20 grand is what we're
trying
to raise.
You're shooting for 20 grand.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you go out there, and how many people can invest?
Are
they called investors? What do you call them? Fans?
We actually call them fanatics.
Fanatics?
Yeah. That's great.
So I think
That's definitely, that number varies because it all depends. You could have
one guy can say, here's 20 grand. I want my 50%.
I think it's only up to 10, only up to half, right? I think you can
that's right. Yeah.
You can only actually, like, one person can only fund up to half of the.
Well,
the
it works out to be half because there's a cap in Georgia
of
10,000
bucks. Right.
Yeah, so they're raising 20, so in this case it's half.
Okay.
Right. Yeah.
That's how it was explained to us.
So yeah, it could be 3 people with heavy investments, or it could be
or
you know, 40
lots of people with 50 bucks.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And do you care? There's one better, really?
No.
Well, it kind of is better, right? You want more and more people, so they share to their network.
I mean, if you're looking for like an exposure standpoint, a networking standpoint, obviously more would be better because that tree and that web would spread
right.
The more people that are involved, for sure. But, I mean... But
the bottom line is get to the 20 grand.
Just because when you're any kind of startup, be it a band or a business, just the guaranteed immediate success is definitely important to create some momentum. Mm-hmm. But, however, I think... Because it is the music industry and it's specific to this, networking is so key. So the more people that are involved, regardless, is just huge for us and for Loud Fund.
Yeah. What kind of music are we talking about here? Country or Western?
Because anything else isn't music
to him.
If I were to,
I've someone has described it as a new version, like a classic rock from 2014. It kind of sits weird a little bit with me, but I think that's kind of an easy, safe way to kind of go about it.
If I were to give you specific, man, the way I would hear it would be like. It would be like an Allman Brothers Foundation with like a modern Radiohead and Sound Tribe Sector 9 thing.
Let's call it Rubenesque.
Cool. Well, Rubenesque. I mean, I like it because they say it's rock and roll with a side of Southern hospitality.
Well, there you go. Yeah, perfect.
Sure. Yeah, that's a marketing guy. Yeah, that's good.
So now you have this project. So is the music exist yet? Or, like, do they get a sample to Fanatics? How does that work?
Yeah, we create a video actually has live performances, the video that we chose to produce, which is another great thing about Loud Fun, is that you get to define how you want to display yourself. Like I said, we have all control of creative rights. And we do have a song that you can listen to, and then the video itself has multiple songs within it that you can kind of hear and capture.
Yeah, and that's what makes Loud Fun unique as well. They looked out for our best interests, not just... for the financial means and all these type of things, but actually our reputation, our integrity, they put our integrity really in the forefront, being like, look, you define the video how you want. You speak about Loud Fun how you want, obviously accurately, but speak about them in your own words. Make it your own. Make sure that your fans and your friends feel comfortable however you want to sell this or however you want to be a part of this, which is definitely rare. They're not like, you have these guidelines and you have to follow
them. So some in the music industry, some people
very arbitrary. Artists.
Mm-hmm. And so the artist's vision kind of sometimes gets diluted.
Extremely.
It sometimes. Becomes the label's vision. Yeah. You know what I mean? So.
Yeah, and their product and what they want to put out, you know, versus what we want to put out, you know.
Well, and I think, you know, I just want to jump in here too, because one of the key ingredients of Loud Fun that I think needs to be known is that we curate the roster. This is not a just sign up and you're in. So it's important to know.
So you're vetting.
We're vetting, and it's vetting on a, hey, are these guys serious? We're also vetting on a, listen, we want to love it. We want to love the artists. We want to believe in what we're doing. Everything that we do is crafted to benefit the artists. So for us, we don't want to deal with just like some party band, and we don't want to deal with somebody who's going to erode investor confidence. That's just not what we're into. I mean, here's the deal: we're all about the artists, but we also understand that some artists don't deserve to have a sustainable career,
right?
Flat out, you know. So I just want to say
that's kind of tricky too for you, right? Because you want to give the artists a chance to share their vision, but they have to be a right fit in your model as well.
Sure. Yes. Right. Our team has to give two thumbs up all the way around.
Right.
Or we
it
walk.
Has to be unanimous. Is that the rule?
It actually does.
No, yeah. I was just wondering.
Yeah.
I mean,
it does. Yeah.
So that's important.
And sometimes artists feel that way as well, because when it becomes to a serious band like all of us in this room, or when music becomes your livelihood, it becomes your life, and especially
right. you have to be a professional.
And it's also about what we connected with Loud Fun is the passion and the want and the yearning to help others as well.
It's the community.
The best thing is huge, because this band is our life. This music is our life.
Right. And you don't want them to pick somebody that isn't professional, and that'll ruin it for everybody that's involved.
I'm not
right?
saying that specifically. But it's true. I'm talking about from our angle.
Right. But
look,
you have to do what you're supposed to do, but he has to choose wisely also. I mean, you don't want other bands that aren't really kind of meet the same professionalism as you guys.
I mean, I think we do. We obviously do because, you know, it's the competitive friendliness and involved in all this. I mean, I think that's a healthy way to do business on, on our end. And we get to define who we are as a company, which is what pretty much, you know, Loud Fun allows us to do. And so if Loud Fun chooses to choose who they want to choose, then that's on them and their business model. But we get a chance to still represent who we are through Loud Fun the way we see fit. And if that means that we stay as professional as possible, then and they choose a band that's not necessarily up to that level, then that's not on us. That's, you know, that's something that they have to deal with the label, which is a great thing because then they get to do market research and know what is correct and what's not correct because it's a new thing and we're trying to define, like, not only as an artist and a band, it's trying to define the new market, but so is record labels and marketing firms and radio stations.
So now in your situation, your campaign exists, you're trying to get 20 grand. Where are you at on that?
I think we're over one fourth right now. And we
so you're getting some traction.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And then now, is this a, have a deadline?
It does. November
22nd.
Yep.
All right. So you're on the clock.
Yeah.
Yes.
So your fans are on the clock.
Yeah.
All right. So before you wrap their segment with them here, I want to make sure the fans know how to get specifically to them and their, you call it a project, campaign?
Campaign.
To their campaign. So what are the coordinates for that?
It's loudfund.com/Rubens Bell. And they're playing a show tonight at the Earl. So if any of you business guys out there want to get a little frisky and have a good time, then go see him at the Earl tonight. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, we're sharing the stage with the Deadfields from North Carolina and Battlefield Collective. It'll be an interesting array of music. It should be a good turnout. It'll be fun. East Atlanta Village is also fun for a few into late night things. So it'll be a good time.
Well, thank you both so much for joining us. This has been a lot of
you.
Fun.
Thank you so much.
And do you guys have a website yourself directly?
Yes, rubensbell.com, and that's rubensbell.com.
And our Instagram and YouTube and Facebook is all just our name, everything. So
good stuff.
All right, Rubens fantastic. So Bill, I got to ask you, you must just be absolutely beaming with pride to watch the work that you and your client have done unfold and look at the kind of impact that it's having on your client. I mean, what incredibly rewarding work it must be.
Yeah,
for
it's,
you.
It's it is, and it's a tremendous amount of fun. Obviously, this is not your typical engagement where you're dealing with a, you know, CMO of a Fortune 100 company and, you know, kind of going through spreadsheets about marketing analytics. Which I'm not denigrating because we love doing that.
Right.
But this is just a very different approach. Well, one of the things that I think is so powerful and one of the reasons why you enjoy it so much, and it goes back to what we talked about a couple of months ago, which is the most powerful place you can be as a company. It is a place that starts from the authenticity of why you do what you do, and everything that flows from that. You hear it in Sam. You hear it in the artist. It was great for us to come in and help them refine how they position it, but we weren't telling them, guys, this is, you know, you, here's what your story should sound like. It's like, it's not about the business per se. We all hope it goes incredibly well and make gazillions of dollars, but it's why they do what they do. And
right,
how
the
they
mission
can.
Is
it's mission. It's mission
right.
driven.
If you don't align philosophically on the mission, it's hard to really.
That's exactly right.
Right.
And then the
same with you, with an artist, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And the ability for them to create a model that allows artists to connect with fans. I mean, it goes back historically even to when you know, arts were funded by patrons who were actually – that's an extraordinary model. So to be part of helping shape that and tell that story and create that story and launch that story for a client, it's just – it's incredibly exciting. We love doing it. We love doing it. And the same model, by the way, applies and should apply whether you are literally a Fortune 50 company or a startup.
Right. Yeah, listening to your fans, getting them invested in what you're up
that just
makes sense, right?
Right, right. And then what's authentic about why you do what you do?
Right.
Why did you do it to begin with? And then how do you tell that story?
Right.
That's a big part of what we do and what we're doing with Sam.
All right. So, Sam, who do you got now? You brought new people now.
I did. The room, I mean, no offense to the Rubens Bell guys, but the room just got a little prettier.
And oh,
a lot prettier. Okay,
whoa.
Fine.
So,
I'm here with Annika Von Gray of the outstanding group Von Gray, and Lauren St. Jane, who, by the way, you're going to be happy with this, Stone, is country.
All right.
Yeah. Yes. So she's making real music. No, I'm just kidding. Well, and I just want to, you know, this is crazy. Right now, something's happening in the atmosphere because there's a lot of talent in this room. and all of them are at different places in their career. But I'm telling you, if you have a chance to check out these artists that we're introducing to you today, you need to do it. And really, music moves the soul, and these guys got it down. So anyway, I'm sorry, I just had to say that. I'm just happy and proud. So
Now you're both part of the same band or different?
No,
you're separate bands.
Separate, yes.
So now how did you get introduced to Sam and this crazy idea?
Well, I'm in Vongrey, and our band has been in the Atlanta scene for quite a while now, and so we've made a lot of friendships with people in the industry that we trust.
Right.
So we had a bunch of mutual friends with Sam and the other guys at Loud Fun that made the introduction.
So then I'm sure in your career there's people you don't trust in the music industry?
We've been very lucky to be surrounded by supportive people, but there's a few.
So now how did you go from your band to building a community on your own?
Well, I mean, it starts locally, obviously, so we've done a lot of stuff in Atlanta, but we've been very lucky to have a lot of success on the PR front on our own without a label, so our number of impressions has been kind of through a lot of PR stuff and touring.
So you hired a PR person? That was part of your strategy early on?
Yeah, we had a management company, a booking company, and a PR company.
And that's separate than a label?
Yes, yeah, that's all.
So those are things that you're, as a band, investing in individually?
Yeah, they're relationships that we went and made individually mm-hmm. on our own with people we trust.
Yeah, and just to give some context to that, I mean, you have Vongrey, four sisters. Mm-hmm. They can all play everything extremely well. And like, it's not cutesy. Like, I went and saw them live, and I was like, okay, four sisters, this is going to be darling. Nope, they will rip your faces off in the best way possible, because they can really play, really sing, great material, great artists. And so that story in and of itself lent itself to great PR,
right?
Great publicists, a great team. And so they're the ones I spoke about earlier that have been on Letterman, Conan, and so on.
Through your own PR effort?
Yeah, that was independent of any kind of label entity.
So now, when you found out that you had that opportunity, what happened in your group?
Well, I mean, it was amazing and exciting, obviously.
So which was the first late night?
We did Letterman first.
Letterman.
Yes.
So now you get a call, hey, I got you on Letterman. So walk us through what that...
Well, it's crazy. I mean, it's a huge opportunity, obviously, and it's so reputable as far as the talent they have on there. So we were honored to be on there, but mostly just grateful that the people we are surrounded by are so... enthusiastic and willing to put us out there. So
Matt, Lee, I'm going to tell you something right now. Lee is fishing. What he wants you to do is tell him that he's better than Letterman.
No, I didn't.
A little better. I'm not a little bit better. Definitely the same league.
But so now what happens? So you're an independent artist. So you're traveling around the country or around the world?
Country, yeah, mostly domestic.
Okay, so domestically. So you started here in Atlanta. Is that true? Okay, you're here in Atlanta. You're playing the bars around here, and you start getting a following, and then you start going outside of Atlanta? Like, how does it work?
Yeah, it really started as a grassroots thing with just playing shows and meeting people and making authentic connections with the people that like the music.
And it was always you four sisters?
It's just the four of us.
Is there any other siblings?
No, just four.
There's four kids, and you said, hey, let's be a band?
Yeah, well, we're classically trained musicians. We've been playing music for a long time, so it was kind of a natural creative progression for us.
And then all four of you were in, or one of you came...
It's definitely a mutual group thing. Yeah,
so
no
you're
one
all
was
in
forced.
It, and you're excited to spend this much time together.
Oh yeah, definitely.
And
in
your
a small
parents,
space.
Your
in
parents
a car.
Are involved. Is there any stage mother?
No, they're very supportive, but
from a distance.
Yeah, exactly.
So now you're out here traveling around. You're getting a following. How do you know when it's working? Like, hey, we're good and people like us. Like, how does that happen?
Well, on a basic level, it's really, are we playing songs and are
that
people
you
moving
like,
their... Yeah,
right?
That we love and hopefully that people can move their butts to and really enjoy on their own. And then on a bigger scale, it's, are people buying it? What's the conversion rate for merchandise?
Oh, so you're into the math of this early on.
Yeah, we view it as a business.
Okay, from the beginning it was a business, or at first it's four sisters having a good time?
Well, it's a passion project and we love what we do, but we've wanted to do it professionally since we started was kind of...
Okay, so that was the goal in mind, was to blow this out.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Right.
I mean, we're thankful for any success that we get, but we're definitely trying to get it on a positive trajectory that, you know, has sustainability.
Let's blow it up.
Right.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. It's amazing. They do have, you know, I can vouch for them. They have a strong business acumen, and they lean into the business strategies and think about it from that angle without without losing any artistic expression, which is really cool. And that's a common ingredient through our artists. They really have had some positive momentum moving forward, and now leaning into really engaging their fans like this. I mean, we're getting feedback. I mean, people are just stoked.
So now you have a campaign?
We do have a campaign.
And what is yours? A plane?
No.
Forget about the band.
We're recording a 5-song EP and are going to want to promote it and be able to tour with it and do all the things that kind of surround a release. So
and you're doing a 50-50 deal with your fans?
Yes, exactly.
And then how much money is a 5-song EP?
Well, we're raising $30,000.
$30,000.
Yes.
And then so now the person gets, they get a piece of the action?
Exactly.
And then plus, do they get anything else, like autographs? You're going to leave voicemails?
Yeah, we have a lot of specials.
Things like that?
Yeah, special.
Is it like Kickstarter in that regard where you get stuff too? Or is it just financially?
No, it is. Right now, the royalty sharing, so that's this is the investment side of it that's explained on loudfund.com. That is available in Georgia, and we hope to expand that, but that's available in Georgia. So to sweeten the pot for people that know Von Gray and Lauren St. Jane and so on that are outside of the state of Georgia, we do have rewards. So they can get – I love the voicemail idea, by the way. But they can get cool rewards to participate, to contribute. And they also get sort of a backstage view of what's happening with the project. They'll get their own dashboard that's really sexy. And they get to follow how a project's doing and connect with the band.
So the band can send, like, I get this private dashboard. You can send me a message and say, great job getting your 20 friends to like us or something.
Yes. Yeah, there's a lot of communication.
Right, because that's important because you want to deepen the relationships.
Absolutely.
And make it more than a transaction, right?
Exactly. Yeah, this is about following a project all the way through and engaging the fan through the process. And
giving them that kind of sneak peek behind the curtain of what it really is like.
Yeah, and so even if you live in a state that you can't participate on the upside or the royalty sharing, there's still a lot of advantage to getting down with this and being a part of
it. Just building relationships with your fans, I mean, there's no negative to that.
But
why this rather than Kickstarter? I mean, there's been a ton of albums funded. There's movies funded on Kickstarter. Why go... Lauren, you want to talk on that?
Absolutely, because I've kind of ran the gamut with that.
So you've tried Kickstarter?
I have. I have a little bit of a different story. I did a Kickstarter a year ago, and it was great. It was fun.
Because the Kickstarter doesn't take any rights, or that you have creative control of the project?
You have most of the creative control. Yes, they do take a percentage at the
end.
Right,
they take a piece of the action on whatever's raised.
Right.
But only if it's raised?
Oh, yes, only if it's raised. If you don't meet it, you don't get anything.
Right, and nobody gets anything. They don't get anything, you don't get anything.
Right, exactly. So I did a Kickstarter. I met my goal, or so I thought I met my goal. This was the thing that they don't tell musicians that you don't know.
This is the fine print in the Kickstarter.
Yeah, which should be in the fine print. And you don't receive your money. It goes into a bank account for, I think, 60 days till afterwards. So I was kind of waiting around for 60 days for that goal.
So what was the amount that you thought you raised?
I think it was $12,000.
$12,000, which is a nice chunk of money.
Yeah. Well, I feel like as an artist, that's not that much, considering people are doing albums for $100,000, you know, normally. So I met my goal, 60 days, the money didn't come through, not all of it. So I'm, you know, emailing Kickstarter, calling them, hey, what's going on? And they're like, well, it looks like credit cards declined.
So some of the people who said that they were going to contribute, their credit card was declined.
Exactly, and some of them were heavy investors. So I was actually thousands short.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, which was kind of a big deal. And so my question to them was, can you tell me who that is? Or no, we can't tell you who that is. You're short this amount. So in my
head, they don't let you continue. So it's done.
It's done. You can later on decide to launch another
a different Kickstarter. One, right?
Right. But that's done. So as an artist, I was put in a really awkward spot.
Right, because a bunch of people thought it was happening.
Right, exactly. So now I technically have fulfilled the Kickstarter. I still have to give these things out because I have some money in, but I don't have all the money to be able to fulfill all that was promised to my fans
right.
through Kickstarter. So it's taken me much longer than I had wanted to fulfill that, get a new EP out, give them their t-shirts, give them
right.
everything that they promised, because so, I've been playing shows, saving up that money right. to right. make up what was lost.
Right.
And she's in a position to where she didn't want to be rude
right.
to the fans.
Like, fans.
True.
I mean, this is the problem with
you
this,
know,
right? Because
yeah.
now
exactly.
you, these are the people that like you the most.
Right. So it's like, I don't want to call
disappoint
anybody
them.
Out, but right. this is awkward, and what do I do?
Right.
You know? So I just kind of kept it on the DL, I guess.
Right.
For a
well,
while.
It became your problem,
yeah,
right?
Now, it became my problem.
Right.
It was super stressful. So I met Sam at a show of the Well Reds, which are actually on with Loud Fun as well. And I didn't know Sam at all. And we just started talking. And I kind of felt like Loud Fun came and courted me for a while. You know, we had lunch, started talking. And I think as a musician, I was a little skeptical at first.
Yeah.
I've played in bands for a long time since I was a kid, and I've done the whole Nashville thing. And I mean, as any musician, when somebody comes to you with a deal, you're kind of skeptical because you know
you've heard it before,
exactly.
Right?
You know of the 360 deals, and
right.
you're going, okay, what do you want? You know, but
where's
we just,
the catch? You're looking for the catch,
exactly,
right?
exactly, looking for the catch. But the more we dove into Loud Fun, or I dove in, I was like, this is great. This is awesome. Like, I can have the creative control, and this is authentic. And I can go to my fans and be real and honest with them about this. And more so, my fans can make money. Like, I feel
and
okay.
And you feel good about
exactly.
that, right?
I feel good. I don't feel guilty going to someone and being like, can you please give me money? Like, that
right.
just feels awkward. Instead, this is being like, hey, why don't you join me? We can do this together. Like,
right, we're in it together.
Yeah, this is the way it should be. This right. is the way record labels should have been from the beginning.
And then how many fans do you need? Like, there was something in the internet a while ago that said like 1,000 fans is what a person needs, at least, you know, to have that kind of groundswell of support that can sustain somebody. Are you finding that number to be accurate, or is it 10,000? Is it 1,000,000? Like, how many do you need?
No. I think it's that number does apply, even maybe a little less.
Really?
Yeah, you can have sustainability with a responsible economic plan, and that's what we're all about. So we're engaging. I mean, think about it this way. When a record gets released, even a huge record, there may be 10 people that really care if it sells. Like, they really need it to sell. About 10 people that care. You know, if you engage the crowd, if you engage your fans, now you have 50, 100, 300, 500 people that you've shared with that have skin in the game that really care if this thing sells. That promotes sustainability. You
but
know
is
what I'm saying?
Are you thinking in your head, like, I need 500 people to spend $100 a year with me, or $1,000? Or like what's going through your head in terms of the economics of this?
I think it depends on the campaign that you're running. Each artist is running a different campaign. And I think you could run the numbers all you want. I mean, we've, with Loud Fun, ran all sorts of numbers.
Scenarios, right?
Exactly. I am not a numbers person, but they are great at it. They have been so helpful. And
I bet Anna's a numbers person.
Depends on the day.
I was going to say, you can't ever have enough fans. You can't. But you can run the numbers however you want.
So now, Sam, what do you look in those terms? Like, I need each fan to be a $50 fan, a $100 fan? Like, what's the kind of the value of a fan?
Yeah, well, wow. the value of a fan's huge, but I'll tell you this. We do. We break it down. We look at sort of the overview of each campaign, mm-hmm. and they are vastly different. I mean, they're you know, we have one artist that's raising money to pay string players to go out with him on the road.
Right.
Well, that looks different, and we understand through our vetting process what his fans are like. And that applies to each one of these artists. We have a basic understanding of, hey, are these people going to come in at $100 and that's going to be the majority, or are these going to be $20?
Right.
And there's just going to be more of them. And I think, you know, you can pull, and our software does this, pulls data from genres, regions, who's coming to shows, all kinds of stuff, right? That's really so super that nerdy, but we use that.
But that can inform them of, you know what, we weren't thinking of going to Cincinnati, but maybe that's a good pocket for us.
Absolutely. Right? We have a heat map that's on each band dashboard. So each artist that we sign, bring on board, and they launch a campaign, they get a band dashboard that's they can only see it.
Right.
But what it tells them how much traffic is coming through Facebook, Twitter, but it also shows them where each purchase has come from on a heat map. So if they know, if they have an explosion in Nebraska, whoa, a lot of people came through Facebook in Nebraska, and look, we have 100 people that funded, that contributed from Nebraska. We need to go play a show in Nebraska.
But could you also identify, well, you know what, that all is because Mary Smith in Nebraska has a big, people like her, and what she says goes. So when she recommends my band, all of a sudden her sorority buys every CD I got.
Yes, and we're constantly building those data models.
Because you want to find that mega fanatic, right? That's right. Really the person that has their own circle.
Yes, absolutely. Yes.
And this gives you that kind of power to do that, or at least
it does.
Create that kind of lines of communication?
Yes. It provides the artists with the information they need to have a sustainable career. I mean, it's led with a campaign and raising money and sharing.
But it's not a one-time thing, right? You want this to be an ongoing just part of the revenue stream of your music, right? Is that or is this just one of 50 things you guys are up to?
That's a great question. I mean, our intent and a line of distinction beyond curation and all and the investment side is that you know, one of our lines of distinction would be that you can rinse and repeat this.
Right.
It's difficult to be ongoing. Go back, give me, donate.
Right.
It's a different posture.
Well, you want them to be invested in your music enough that they want you to, hey, you should do another thing or
exactly.
Tour again, or when are you coming to the West Coast? You know, let's fund a West Coast trip.
Exactly. That you can have that much demand time after time that you can go back, that your fans can be like, hey, I want a new album. When are you going to do that? I'm ready to give. Let's do this again.
Right.
Let's partner up again. So
this gives you the power to do that if
absolutely,
you so choose.
Absolutely, absolutely. And also signing a distribution deal with these guys, like the longevity of that, that's great. I'm all about that.
Right. And then you purposely allow the investment to be a project, not like they can't buy you, like the label kind of buys you in perpetuity, right? That was
correct.
On purpose. That wasn't it.
No, that was on purpose. We want to do it on a per project basis. And
to further distinguish yourself from a label.
Yeah. And just put the artist in the driver's seat.
Mm-hmm.
But
and they can have multiple
really
campaigns
fair.
Simultaneously, though, right?
Sure.
Right? You can have like a campaign for an EP and a campaign for a tour and a campaign for a new line of T-shirts or something.
Mm-hmm.
You can. Right now, everything is tied back with how we track a project through our distribution, which is through recorded music.
So recorded music is the driver of any project?
Yes.
Well, and have you asked him about his talk radio division?
Yeah.
No, I'm getting fired up about this. What if we did something like this for like our Women in Business series to fund that? Because we're trying to figure out how to get that underwritten. So we'll talk after the show about
maybe
the talk
expand
radio division.
Great. But beyond music to radio.
Yeah, who knows? We'll see. I
well, it's funny that you say that, because in one of the early sessions we had when we were going through our own discovery process and positioning and destination mapping with Sam and his team, quickly you can realize that this could easily extend as a model into multiple areas of content, areas of production. And the trick is, as always, with any business going into launch, but in particular, it's a ruthless sense of focus and discipline about what you do.
And what you don't do.
And what you don't do, right? So so could it become massively huge? Absolutely. But you got to walk before you run, obviously.
Right.
And so I think they have to nail down what they're doing right now, which is exactly what their story is about and why they approached us and how we got involved. And it's really shaping that. What does that map look like for growth? And that, I think, is something that once you have it, it becomes the lens through which you make decisions, but you have to adhere to it. You have to say, this is our path. And there are about 1,000 great ideas, but we can't do all those great ideas today. So we're going to focus on what we really can do, what we can know and what we can drive, and what we can see an immediate return on.
Now, that's where the Bill's firm is providing value for you, is keep you focused on point and helping you
Absolutely. And also, really, we've been amazed by how hands-on it's been. you know, you think about a company like Top Right that you see their clientele and you go, okay, immediately you start thinking, well, they're going to be consultants, maybe their nose in the air a little bit. And
consultants are like the record labels of business.
Yeah, well, you know, and we're a renegade kind of a rowdy bunch. Hey, no, I'm going to a good place. There's a good place to this, Bill.
Thankfully.
So, you know, that's what you think, and we've been surprised that it's been the opposite. It's been very hands-on,
right.
Very real. They have jumped into our culture, understand it, and buy it, and get it, and
right.
support it. And so
instead of forcing you to. To
exactly.
jump into their world.
Right.
right.
Yeah. And trying to shift our identity to some other successful clients that they have. That's not been the case. So for us, that's a long way to answer. Yes, they're keeping us focused, laser targeted on our approach and how to expand the story and message to a greater audience about Loudfund and what we're doing.
And are you seeing that actually? Is there something showing you that that's working?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So you're getting traction, you're getting...
Yeah.
And so what are the metrics of... what's the metrics for traction for you?
For us, it would be through... We measure everything.
Right.
And so does Top Right. I mean, they measure... We have real-time analytics that go into this. So we see how many people are visiting our sites. We know how many people are visiting each campaign site, how many views we're getting on their videos. But it's also the conversion rate. How many people are participating with their finances on our brand new platform?
Right.
I mean, we're exactly a month since we've launched our software.
Right.
We've been a year in development. Received our first round of funding as a company in December, preparing for our next round here in the next few weeks. But the software is only a few weeks old, and we took the first 10 days or so to do a soft because we didn't want the horsepower of Top Right leaning
right,
into
a
software that breaks, right?
Right.
And so we make sure that it doesn't break, and so we're seeing tangible results in a very rapid pace, and then on a larger scale, really are crafting strategies that I believe are going to prepare us for the next tier, our next tier as a company.
So now, do you need more artists? You need more fan involvement? I mean, because some of the fan involvement is kind of on the backs of the artists, right? Because they got to have their community support their efforts. Are you out there separately creating opportunity for them?
For the fans?
For the fans to connect with the individual artists.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we're trying to do everything we can possibly do.
Because you're just focused. Your laser focus is in serving the artists to make sure that each of their campaigns get funded and they get the outcome they desire.
Right, and I'll piggyback on that. And that their music is being properly distributed,
right.
And that their fans and the bands get paid what they deserve to be paid, and all that's fully disclosed. That's a big part of it. Because
transparency is a big part of this.
Yes, yes.
Right?
Transparency equals trust. Mm-hmm. And one thing that the music business, by and large, has lacked is transparency. It's very complex and confusing. It doesn't need to be. And so we show those economics on our platform.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a lot of skin in the game to make sure that these projects do well. We want sales.
Right.
And that's where we have a lot of things in common.
Right.
With
Look,
companies.
When your first 10 go out there and they all get funded, it's going to be a lot easier to get your next 10.
Absolutely. But also their projects. We want the records to sell well.
Right.
I mean, that helps our economic layout as Loudfund as a company. And it also strengthens the artists, you know, helps them scale. I mean, that's right now the only way that an artist has the ability to scale is through recorded music. That's still true. Otherwise, they have to be present. They have to be in the room face-to-face. And so we want to promote recorded music. And that's what's so great about the Michelle Kaplinger and the Atlanta chapter of the Grammys and how they really see what we're doing and getting behind it and giving us a lot of great advice and connecting dots because that's what they're about.
Right.
They're about strengthening, building value back in recorded music. And so that's our lofty goal. At the end of the day, if we had to hit the bullseye, it would be that we've helped a lot of amazing artists that should be heard help them have an economic plan that they have sustainable careers because of our efforts. It's also because music is now valued. The people are now buying music because it means something in their lives.
Yeah, and one of the things that's really interesting is when we go through our process with any client, we did here as well, when you talk about that 3 to 5 year destination,
right.
What do you want that story to be? It really forces you to go through, and you heard me say it last time, but a process of simplicity, clarity, and alignment around what that is, right? What it isn't. And in part, there's so many ways you can slice it, and it's not simply about the financial metrics. It's about, in this case, that when that story is written some years down the road and come back and do your by then globally syndicated show, hopefully, it will be about a group that rebalanced an industry, that redefined
right.
how an artist connects with the fan, because that needed to be done and that was their passion.
Right.
As a byproduct, they had a great business that was created around it. But it wasn't, let's go create a break, let's go be a new label and make sure the economics work in our favor. This is about how do we create a new platform that connects fans, patrons, artists together. And if you were to create such a thing as a new label, what would it look like? That's a pretty good start. And helping crystallize that and refine that gives you a path, and it gives you a clear path that you know every decision we make, every artist we bring on, every campaign we launch, every project has to fit into that model.
Right. It gives you that black and white clarity.
It does. It really does, which is so hugely important. And that's frankly, we help, we're an enabler for that, right? We just help them go through that process. And that's largely what we do. And then you sit in a room like this full of the talent and you realize this is really what it's about.
All right. Well, let's give coordinates for everybody. Anna, Lauren, why don't you share best ways to reach you guys?
Well, my band Von Gray is all over the internet, but for Loudfund, it's loudfund.com/Von Gray and whatever social media websites are out there, we're on them.
All right, Lauren.
The same. It's loudfund.com/LaurenSt.Jane, and that's STJANE.
And you're found all over the interweb as well?
Yes, Lauren St. Jane Music, laurensaint.com. You can, get my music on iTunes. I just dropped a single last week.
And it's so good. You're going to love it. You're going to love it over there.
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, yeah.
And, hey, we can get you an autograph.
That would be fantastic. I would like to see, and I want a bobblehead.
I think Ruben's Bell bobblehead would be so hot.
You guys are missing out on the whole bobblehead market. That's what I'm hearing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's great. I'm going to encourage the listeners to follow these acts, they're really great, and I think it'll enrich your listening experience and participate.
Right.
They're making a really cool offer that's never been done in history, and I love that. I love that each one of our artists are pioneers, and are basically saying, "Listen, we've talked it through. This is a better way, and we're going to lead it for other artists." That is magnificent. They're making history. I couldn't be more proud of them.
And the fanatics get a chance to participate in that history. So yes. Now, Loudfund, where can they go? Loudfund.com?
Yep, loudfund.com. They will see our artists.
And then now you said that you are going for another round of funding. If somebody wanted to fund Loudfund, is there a way to learn there? Or they got to go somewhere else?
No, that...
or you got that covered?
Well, we have a great team of investors, and we're... so thankful to have them. They've allowed us to launch this platform and have a living while we do it. They have first right of refusal, and we want them. We want them. We
to
want them
refuse.
In the game. Yeah, we want them to not refuse. We're always open to discussions, and we love building relationships with people that feel like this may be a good fit for them. At the same time, I'm really not at liberty to open that gate.
All right.
Yeah.
Now, are you playing anywhere, or your days are done in front of a microphone singing?
Oh, me?
Or for me?
You mean me? I'm just an old man. Back in my day, we used to play. I do it for fun. I still write, and I do it. This may sound weird because we've been talking about rock and roll and all these kinds of things, but I actually play at 12 Stone Church. It's kind of a big church in Gwinnett, and I dig it. I love it and love to write music and partner with artists that we work with and get creative with that. But, nothing fills my heart, and I've said this for years, nothing fills my heart like performing music. I've just found the exception. with Loud Fund, it truly is a passion, and I love it. And we've given our lives to it. I mean, this isn't a privileged people that are having Loud Fund handed to us as CEO and founders on a silver platter. I mean, we're sacrificing a lot because we believe it, and so it's been nice to really pour my heart out at, that was once filled completely with by music, by right. performing music, into seeing these other great artists make history. You know, it's awesome. So, yeah,
good stuff, Bill.
Yeah, so for us, it's toprightpartners.com, and you know, I couldn't be happier to have these guys here with me. It just shows a different slice of what we do, and honestly, this may sound self-serving. It kind of proves the point. It's not really about us. It's about what we can do and do for our clients, and that's our passion, and that's what we get up every day and look forward to.
And giving them the opportunity to tell their story that's important.
Correct. Absolutely.
Good stuff. Well, thank you all for being part of the show. This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio.